day. I'd like to call the meeting of the Region Queens Municipality Regular Council Tuesday, November 8th, 2022, to order. Item number two, changes approval to the agenda. I would like to add one matter under in camera, and that is personnel, which becomes 9.1. Are there any other changes to the agenda? If not, I'll ask for approval of the agenda. Moved by Councilor Charlton, seconded by Councilor Gidney. All those in favor? To those who are here today, we have three presentations scheduled, so please bear with us. After that point in time, item four is public question comment session. If anyone wishes to speak at that point in time, please be advised that you would have 5 minutes in order to address council. So we're going to move forward into our quarterly report from the Queens RCMP, Staff Sergeant Archibald.
Great to see everybody come out today and support your local police department. Thanks very much. Speaking of public speaking, I'm all prepared today for this. So I did up a report here, ladies and gentlemen, but I can just kind of speak freely on the recent reports. Our main concern in the past, during this past year, we go by, our fiscal year starts April, so it's been a struggle for us with human resourcing, staffing levels, and such, but Queens County's been relatively unscathed. We do have a few shortages that we're dealing with in-house and throughout the division. That's been our main concern, is just keeping our staffing levels at a minimum, which would be 2 members per shift for all of Queens County. So oftentimes what will happen is if we do have a glaring gap in the schedule, we'll reach out to other detachments within H Division, and they'll come fill us. It's kind of been like that all throughout Nova Scotia right now. We're not alone in that matter. Recruiting levels for policing are down nowadays, so there's different recruiting strategies taking place to try and up it again and get back on course to where we need to be. As far as Queens County goes, crime itself remains low. Statistics compared to last year are lower, which has been good because of the human resourcing struggles we've been having by times. So there's nothing glaring or concerning on that point. Our strategies remain the same. So of course, road safety, continuing to issue tickets is a priority to enhance road safety. Impaired driving remains the same as far as statistics go. Overall though, our road safety numbers have been down as opposed to previous years, and that's just again, oftentimes meeting shift minimums this past 8-9 months has been challenging. What happened mainly was we have 10 constables in Queens County, 2 corporals and myself. So when we have a retirement, which took place about a year ago, for example, we're only getting a replacement next month for that, sorry, this month. So it's taken a long time to fill these gaps. Any other vacancies we have might be what we call a soft vacancy. So that could be somebody who's off leave of their pay, maternity parental leave, or just off with an injury. So we don't get replacements for those positions. We have to deal with the shortage. So our numbers are a little down on road safety compared to previous years. Crime prevention and reduction. This is when we go out and check court-ordered offenders who reside in our area. We're still able to do that just as easily, and we've seen a dip in those offenders in our area as well. So Queens County is a relatively safe place to live and reside. We continue to enforce those conditions. If someone's on a curfew order for whatever reason, we'll go check them on a weekly basis, nightly basis if we can. So I can speak on, we have a mental health strategy, which is if we have a certain person who's struggling with mental health issues, we can try and assist them through Department of Health. However, our biggest concern with that is now if we do get any person with mental health distress who needs a physician, after hours with hospital closures, we have to transport to Bridgewater, which takes us out of the area. Much like EHS struggles with the issue, we do the same. It's no different for us if there's no physician in the area, we have to take to where the nearest physician is. So that's a struggle because those calls remain high for us. So again, nothing glaring in the report. report on. Things remain good in the area, no major spikes. We're doing what we can for traffic enforcement wise. I know that's often a hot topic here, so I guess I can take any questions.
Are there any questions for Staff Sergeant or Jabal? Councillor Brown?
I live in Greenfield, and that's kind of the fastest growing area in Queens County right now. And I've been hearing some anecdotal stories from some residents about break-ins or fear of break-ins, where we have a lot of areas that, you know, they're private roads, they don't have street lights, they're starting to get a little nervous about personal property. And as well, I've mentioned before that the amount of drinking and driving that seems apparent from the amount of liquor bottles that I pick up on the side of the road as I walk through Lavelle. I'd just like to point out that some of these issues, as it grows fast, are growing out there as well.
Oh, that's right. And for a county this size, and Liverpool being the main hub, I would consider, we do get a lot of calls in North Queens. We spend a lot of our time up there, all hours really. Nighttime, daytime, doesn't really matter. We're getting called, equal amount of calls up there by time. So it is something we like to proactively control, including the both reservations up there in Ponhook and Wildcat. We like to just be seen, if nothing else, through those areas, which is part of our strategy as well. And it's great that a lot of them are just on route to being up north and in Queens County and being seen up there as well. So something we'll be considering.
And I do understand the challenges, because most of what happens out there in the summer is on evenings and weekends, which is a challenging time for you to patrol as well.
Any other questions, Councillor Deputy Mayor Fancy?
Yes, a couple of things here. When I look at the yearly statistics, and I'm talking about April and March, so that's only really 2 months. And Councillor Brown mentioned seven impaired driving.
Wrong date.
Your
wrong date. You have April 1st, 2022. It should have been April 1st, 2021.
Well, it's April, it's April 2022 to March 2023. So it's the first 10 months of the year. Sorry, that's a fake one.
I'll say 2 months, that's pretty.
But Staff Sergeant, it says yearly statistics. So you wouldn't have yearly statistics to March 31st, 2023.
No, it'd be that's our fiscal year. It would be the whole fiscal year, April 1st to March 31st.
Okay.
It's our fiscal year, sorry. So it'd be from April 1st till November.
One other question along with that. I just saw that, and I saw that 2 months. We get a problem here. the radar trail. It says here that it's broke down and they got to repair and things. Is that not some kind of a priority, or does it just get put on the back burner? And how long are we going to have it up here? Because what we do.
Well, I could speak on that for sure, Mr. Fancy. So the speed radar trailer, since I arrived here 3.5 years ago, it wasn't ours to begin with. I borrowed it from a different county. I don't know if there used to be one funded through community policing and municipality in previous years, or what happened to it. Okay. Yeah, I don't know what happened to that unit, to be honest. So I took one for myself, which was having issues, these speed trailers. And it's being repaired again now as we speak. There's only one person in the province that I know that services the trailer. So it's being done and completed, and will be used again, hopefully with no further issues. But there are other avenues to that, of course. I lightly spoke on with council for a bit. There was possibly purchasing a new one, or even we spoke with the past stationary speed displays on telephone poles powered stationary ones. So those are other options to explore that we're not opposed to. It's just the funding, of course. We got to figure out logistics on that and where it would come from.
You're talking about the ones on the post, a shared, you talk about shared venture?
No, the portable trailer is something that maybe we could share cost with. These stationary radar displays are usually funded by municipalities, to my knowledge, 100%.
Okay.
Yeah.
Any other questions of Staff Sergeant? Councillor Charlton?
In regards to that comment about the speed signs, we've talked about that as council before, about potentially putting up a certain area. would you have any areas that you would recommend more than others?
I would, all areas that you guys are thinking of, we think the same of, I could say that, but areas that jump out at me, is Somerville. Summertime is a very tight area by the quarter deck there, somewhere around, that's where we used to often leave the speed trailer. We did have a pedestrian accident there in previous years, so anywhere where there's tight quarters, and high density of people, Somerville always pops in my mind, but not to disclude any other areas, because a lot of areas in Queens County would benefit from one, in my opinion, so that's just one area.
And as far as the signs that help pedestrians safely cross, do you feel that, excuse me, those are helpful in an area like our freeway intersection, for example?
Sorry, what signs do you?
The crossing signs that flash when someone is using a crosswalk.
That could be of a benefit, again, I'm not a traffic authority expert by all means, but I know the three-way intersection has a lot of history there as far as pedestrian safety, so of course any type of study, enough could there be beneficial, but I would say yes, it probably will be beneficial.
Okay.
Are there any other questions? If not, I thank you, and it's great that there's a full house. I suspect many people have never met you before, so good luck.
I should have started off, sorry, Staff Sergeant Archibald here at Queens Detachment, my counterpart back here, Corporal Mike Buckland. Mike arrived here back in December, so he's one of the NCOs, as we call it, a non-commissioned officer at Queens Detachment, so there's two, he's one of the four corporals, two corporals here. So we are looking pretty good right now on paper, as you can see the report. We're one vacant. We just had a member transfer to Annapolis District, so we lost that member to them, and we'll just await a replacement for him as well. So we're doing pretty good, and Queens County is a hidden gem, in my opinion. I've been here for 3 years, so you guys live in a great area. It's the best, posting I've been at by far in my 17-year career. So
thank you.
Thanks, everyone.
Thanks.
Three point two, that would be Mr. Larry Cochran's request for water sewer extension Mount Pleasant.
I'd like to thank the mayor and council and welcome everyone here. A very exciting opportunity for us to present to you a property development that we're trying to bring forward in Queens County. My name is Larry Cochran, like most of you know who I am. And I'll just give a little background for me on this property. I was born and raised in Liverpool. I moved away after I went to university. I was around 19. And I lived in Halifax for 14 years. Moved to Ontario, started a veterinary diagnostics business in 2003, where I resided for almost 15 years. I'd always try to get home to Liverpool every year for Christmas and in the summer. And in one of those visits, I had the good luck to come upon the property, which had been for sale for a long time. But timing is everything, and there was 12 people that the property was left to. Finally decided they really wanted to sell the property, so I had the good luck to buy the property. This property is very dear to my heart. I grew up beside it. I spent many years exploring and playing on that property, and this is really the main reason why my family and us moved back to Liverpool. The property is ideally located next to the hospital and schools, which is ideal for families, professionals, and retired citizens to enjoy. It offers fantastic harbor views, and I can envision a lively, modern neighborhood for all levels of society. These kind of diverse and integrated communities are being built all over the province due to popular demand. So I'd first like to introduce Rob LeBlanc, the founder of Fathom Studio, a design and architectural firm in Halifax. His company has been in business for over 25 years, and he's worked on several projects across Atlantic Canada, I'm sure many of you would know, including right now two very large residential developments in Bridgewater. Fathom Studio's accomplishments are listed on their website, if any of you guys want to review them. He will take you through the majority of the presentation, and then hand it off to me for the end to discuss the financial calculations and the conclusion. We'll move through this hopefully as fast as we can, because I think obviously time is probably a premium today with everybody, everybody here. So, anyways, over to you, Rob.
All right, sounds good. Might be easier to see if I just turn off the lights. I don't know how dark. Is that better or worse?
Fine, yeah.
Well, thanks, Larry, for the intro. I'm going to take the next 5 or 10 minutes and just kind of walk through the request. Essentially, we're looking for an extension of services to the property. It's about a couple of hundred meters to the south to extend those services. And by doing that, that opens up the opportunity for rezoning. So the parcel shown in this little pink area down at the very bottom right corner of the screen, it's currently zoned as RL. It's about 35 acres. And just in terms of its strategic location, it's about 800 meters from Main Street, about a 10-minute walk, 350 meters or a 5-minute walk from the high school, and a couple of hundred meters walk, just a couple of minutes from the hospital. So we developed an initial site plan that looks at a two-phased development. Phase one, which faces onto Shore Road and has a new entrance directly across from Pleasant Avenue, consists of three single-family units on Shore Road, and those are under the existing RL zoning designation. And an additional 30 semi-detached units and a small 24-unit multi-unit building. Phase two, you can see this line extending across the back here, is an additional 30 semi-detached units. So in total, 87 units, is about 11.7 acres that's encompassed in this phase, and that's roughly 7.4 units per acre, which is a fairly low density development. So as part of the proposed rezoning, which is tied to the service extension, in the MPS, it allows consideration for rezoning, for council to consider rezoning. We're looking at maintaining the existing RL zoning for those three units along Shore Road. We're looking for a rezoning to RM for the multi-unit building and RG for the remainder of the duplexes. So part of the rezoning rationale is really that consideration will be given if it's within the municipal service boundary, which this site is. And so that policy in the municipal planning strategy has been met. There's a number of additional policies in the MPS that, because of the time frame here, I won't get into the details of it, but effectively the ability to rezone is unlocked if the services can be extended to the parcel. There's a number of other conditions that must be met, and we feel comfortable that those conditions can be met. So part of the initial request is an extension of about 150 meters of water from just in front of the hospital to the southeast, and a 200 meter sanitary extension to the property. And as part of this process, Larry hired Able Engineering, who looked at the profiles of that and confirmed that that is doable and possible, and if the services can be run to the site, we can extend services into the site to address all of phase one. Phase two of the development would either need a lift station to be provided by the developer or an on-site system. As Larry mentioned, we're currently working on just over 40,000 units in Atlantic Canada, so New Brunswick, PEI, Newfoundland, Nova Scotia. In Bridgewater, we're currently taking through two development agreements, both of them for around 400 units each. And that's just a small fraction of developments that Bridgewater is looking at, just to give you a sense of what's going on in other areas. So I'm going to keep going. So in total, we're looking at 87 units done in two phases. It's about $20 million of construction. Larry anticipates that this will happen over about 11 years. And so we would anticipate that a lot of the first phase streets would be built and then the lots sold over the first number of years. And without diving too deep into this, you know, we're working on so many units all around Atlantic Canada. Just the economic spin-offs and community benefits that come from projects like this, the local spending, the tax benefits that will accrue to the municipality, which Larry's going to touch on a little bit more. The new residents, you know, with these 87 units, between two and three people per on average, you know, somewhere around 250 new residents for the town. Larry's also looking at a green development, so solar panels, open space for recreation, and community sustainability as part of the building design process. And just in terms of the challenges for the community, we know that in these smaller communities, a couple of hours outside of the main urban centers, that projects like this really provide a boost for economic development. Those new residents and new spending that will come to the town help everything from coffee shops to barbers that need business. We also know, and I'm sure you're reading lots about the housing shortage in Nova Scotia, and that's coupled with the province's goal to essentially double the population in the next 25 years to 2 million people. And so, you know, how best to do that? And, you know, the province has taken their position on this, that growth should happen in cluster developments rather than suburban sprawl, large lots requiring more roads and more infrastructure, and requiring more people to drive. So these compact developments are really great for the province. And you know, Larry's spoken to local realtors who confirmed that the opportunities for growth for both local residents and for people coming from Ontario and other provinces is growing. I'm currently working on another one project, about 800 units just to the west of here, and another hour's drive, and most of those residents, it's an Ontario developer, will be coming from Ontario. So professionals looking for new housing, the need for affordable housing, housing costs are continuing to go up. About 3 years ago, it was about $180 a square foot for build construction for residential. It's currently sitting somewhere between 300 and 320 a square foot. So things have almost doubled in just a couple of years. And so providing affordability is very challenging. So this project is designed to meet some of those housing struggles. And just in terms of the timelines for construction, the 11-year build out in the big round circles at the top, and the anticipated release of those homes. So in the first year, four homes constructed. In the next year, be another eight homes for a total of 12 homes, and then 20 homes all the way up to 87 homes. So Larry's anticipating before moving into phase two. And just giving you a look and feel for some of these semi-detached homes. Larry's anticipating a market for at-grade units for seniors rather than two-story units. Everything will be one floor, about 900 square feet of space, and anticipated to retail around $400,000. The three single-family homes will be roughly between 1,200 and 1,400 square feet, and they'll likely retail in the $500,000 range. And the apartment building, we're anticipating a two-story, 24 unit, some underground parking with that, and approximate cost of about $4 million to build that building. So I'm going to pass it on over to Larry to take us home on the phase.
Yeah, just to clarify a little bit more on that, the rent, the apartment building won't be a rental, building. It won't be for, will not be for sale. There'll be rentals, and we're hoping that will be an affordable housing portion of this development. Whereas the semi-detached and single homes will be sold. Just to clarify that. Okay, so I wanted to try to do a return on investment for the municipality, how they can recoup some of the expense here for extending the services. So I have, in order to build these units, we'd be looking at local builders to build them, as well as prefabricated houses. My brother has a Prestige line in South Shore. So between these two, this is how we would look to pursue those targets that we're always talking about as far as the build-out over those 11 years. Okay, so what I wanted to do too is just show you the benefits of the local spending in the area. And this was something we had taken from from us Nova Scotia survey in 2019 that was done, and just showing what the average household would spend in Nova Scotia in 2019. I took off income taxes and housing because obviously that's not part of this equation. When we added up all those categories, we came to a total spending of $48,238. And then I built these assumptions to determine the return on investment. So as I just mentioned, $48,236 was the annual spending in 2019. I used to come to 2022 a 3% per year roughly inflation, or 10% increase, which took it to $53,059. And then I assumed, you know, I think this could be on the high side, 40% would be spent outside of our county, leaving $31,835 spent average per year for household. The rural tax rate currently is $1.07 per $100 assessment. Sewer and water is calculated at 105 quarterly or 420 annually. I also didn't use any increases in property taxes over the first 7 years, which is the time period for phase one, for 57 homes. So I didn't use any increases there. In order to get tax, determine the tax tax value for the residential tax rate, I just added up the cost of all those buildings to build them. Got a total of $17,650,000 divided by the 57, which left me a $310,000 average value per unit to use as a tax assessment. So this graph is showing you the potential annual household spending, property taxes, sewer and water, and the number of households that are built in each year. So if you look at the far right-hand column, right there, that's the amount of houses that will be built each year. And all I did was, for the potential it also gave us a tax, property taxes of $13,268. Again, four times the assessed value times $1.70 for $100. And then sewer and water, was it 420? I forget what the number was, but times four came to 1680. And then I just proceeded down the columns. So you're looking at 12 units, second year, 20 units, 28 units. And then the totals after the first phase, this is roughly 6.4 million in potential local spending. Taxes, property taxes of $666,000, and sewer and water of $84,240. So phase one had a total of $750,000. If I added together the sewer and water and property taxes, $6.4 million, as I said, potential local spending on those 57 units that were built. So I just wanted to get a rough idea of what would cost to bring those services up. There is, you know, we don't know exactly where the pipe ends in that area. So this is a rough idea. I took this to Dexter to get a quote. And based on all those things that you see underneath, it came to a budget of $725,000 to bring those services up. So I want to show the ROI on this because when you take the total tax revenues that we're going to recoup after 7 years, it will pay for the extension of those services. So I thought that was important. We saw that timeline when the town can expect to recoup its money. Then we get into phase two, is an additional 30 semi-detached homes. So approximate timeline would be year 8, 2030, 2034 roughly, time frame on that. My assumptions on this one is, as I said, 4 years for timeline. Estimated value of the homes on the eight-year outlook would increase to $450,000 for those semi-detached. Estimated annual household spending would be $80,000. Increasing from what we had previously, 40% spent outside would be $48,000, and that's with your inflation and so forth for those 8 years to bring that number up to $48,000. And then I estimated a municipal tax increase to $1.16 per $100, and sewer and water going from $4.20 to $6.30 at that point. So in phase two, this is the same graph I used. Shows you now I would be in that year 8 at 64 units, and you can see the impact of the potential and potential household spending in the area. It would be year 8, 3 million, year 9, 3.4, year 3, 3.8, year 4, 4.1. Adding that all together, coming to a total of $14,400,000 in that 4 year period. Total taxes of $1.66 million and total sewer and water of $189,000. So the total at phase two would be $1.6 million for property taxes, sewer and water, opposed to, as I mentioned earlier, $725,000 to bring up the services. 14.4 million and 30 units. Total economic effect at project completion would be 2.35 million. That's total property taxes over the 11-year period. 20.8 million local spending to the economy, and 87 units constructed. So our commitment to you. One of the concerns was that, you know, if you guys did extend the services, that I may just sit there and not develop the property, and I can understand that's a legitimate concern. So I'm willing to put in writing contractually that we would build the first 400 feet of that main road in with all the services, all the engineers, all the design and engineer fees for the project, well as four units, which would be roughly an investment on my side of $2.5 million to kickstart that project. Hopefully those guarantees will offset any concerns or risks that you feel in that cost of bringing the services up. So the conclusion, if this development goes forward, I mean, it would be a big win for Queens County. And, you know, the main reasons it's going to attract the families to the area, significant increase in tax revenues, $2.35 million annually once that project is completed. I'm going to be looking to do green and modern construction. I really think in the future that, you know, green energy is going to be front and center for the federal government, I believe the provincial government, so I think there'll be a lot of programs for that. I've been in the solar business for 3 or 4 years when I first moved back, so that's going to be front line and center for me, that basically these homes would have solar on the roof. Hoping to be a carbon neutral situation for each of them for this development. Prosperity for the town, $20.8 million increase in spending each year. And, you know, another point that somebody said to me the other day, I don't have the presentation, but we are losing people in this town quite often because they can't find that type of construction, single level, small footprint, to other areas of Nova Scotia, because as our population is aging, they can't necessarily handle a two-story house anymore. That's the majority of the construction in this town. And build the reputation that, you know, Liverpool, what a great place it is to live in Liverpool. Of course, say Queens County. So I have some letters of support here. One's coming from Dr. Al Doucette, who is the president of the Queens General Hospital Foundation. I believe he's in attendance somewhere.
I'm right here.
Oh, over there. Right. I think Al wanted to have a few words, so I'll just give you a couple words to speak right now.
My letter says that all foundation.
I would just add to that too, we have a new manor that's going to be built here in the next 5 years, so it would also help support a lot of healthcare professionals that would be coming in for that as well. Thank you. I also have a letter here from the Chamber of Commerce from President Kerry Morash. Who's also here in attendance, and I think the letter is, you know, fairly self-explanatory. You know, the economic impacts that, you know, this project like this could do for the area. And then finally, a letter from Kim Maslin, who regrets that she couldn't be here today. Also, very much in support of this project, because as we mentioned earlier, we're dealing with a province-wide housing shortage, and you know, it's a big challenge for her party to provide housing. I believe there's going to be some programs according to exciting. Yeah, so it was great. So I just want to thank everybody for your time and take it out to questions.
Thank you, Mr. LeBlanc and Mr. Cochran, for that well-planned presentation. So members of council, you have had this presentation package for many days now. I remind you that this is not a place to debate or attempt to enter into negotiations. That is matters for another time. The opportunity that you have at this point in time is to ask any questions, to clarify anything that you have seen presented, or to provide your opinion on the proposal. So, floor is open. Councillor Gidden.
Okay, thank you for the presentation. It gives us a lot of things to think about. Very well done. I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Councillor Gidden. Councillor Brown.
Thanks for the presentation. It looks like it was well put together. I had a couple of questions. When you're looking at a 24-unit apartment building, and I'm trying to put the numbers in there each year, I don't see a bump of 24. Are you looking
well,
at 24?
Well, I broke that out because I didn't want to get too convoluted with how that graph
yeah.
would look. But in those 57 units,
yeah.
the first phase, that 24-unit apartment.
I'm just curious if it was going to be, if it was a modular, like eight and eight.
No, there would be obviously, that would be, potentially a year and a half, 2 year, year and a half to go,
okay.
something like that. So I tried to break it out as best I could.
Okay. Who do you foresee owning the roads through there? Do you expect those to be private roads or taken over by the municipality?
Roads, yeah. I mean, they'd be built to whatever your municipal standards would be. That's my opinion.
And my last question, sorry I'm taking too much time, but
that's fine.
The field is quite a big place, and when we look at it, it looks like even after phase two, there's quite a bit of land left down
yeah,
towards
absolutely.
The water. So
absolutely.
You foresee
yeah.
this going on, not just 11 years.
We go on, a lot bigger. That's using up, it's 35 acres of property, so
yeah.
it's 11 acres.
About a third.
Parking, so
yeah.
we could potentially double that project, but we want to walk before we run.
Yeah. Okay. And
thanks for your questions.
Yeah, thanks.
Other councillor.
I too would like to thank you for the presentation. It's excellent. And we all are feeling the effects of the hospital being close to speak on Alvin Seth's point. To have something like this close to a hospital is a win in itself, not to mention the other opportunities for other residents just to live close to a school or daycare. Or, there's a million and one reasons why this is an exciting project. So thank you.
Deputy Mayor Clancy.
A couple things, Larry, if you don't mind. In front of the Bridge Gate, okay? So the total cost you're looking at from the region is water and sewer,
Yeah.
And so that comes on in phase one, but in phase two, if you need to go, then you'd be doing lift stations and such.
That's my cost.
That's your cost.
Yeah.
So it's only the initial cost.
The initial cost to bring it up,
to where it is.
And to clarify, I just needed to hit the property. It doesn't have to go all the way up to the initial. You see the main road come in?
Right.
It will be in that left hand corner.
Yeah.
Right there.
Easement.
Yeah.
So
from there on in, then I would be responsible for all the services.
And in the affordable end aspect is the 24 unit. The 24 unit, would that have something as an elevator or things? Make it so it's
I would hope to have an elevator in it. Yeah, yeah. Most apartment buildings now, it's pretty much a standard. So, yes. Yeah. There would be an elevator in the building. I just said one other thing, generally, too, because I know this is what's popping in the back.
Could be
since you did show the, and make reference to the units in Bridgewater and Moon River County, 444 units. So therefore, you must be aware of the timeline in which they are building those. Could you give an indication of what timeline they're working on?
Yeah, I mean, both those projects are probably in the 10-year range for the full building. First project on Glen Allen is just finishing through the VA development agreement process. The next one goes to council and will be initiated next month or so.
So, to Mr. Cochran, as you know, council will consider this. I think what, considering Mr. Sapp, we are well aware of the need for professional housing. Council also hears about the great need for affordable housing. We have Queens Care Housing Society, who we anticipate and hope will provide that affordable housing. You are correct in which you state about the easiness to rezone. The question which council will have to consider is, yes, Dexter's gave the quote of $750,000, and council will have to take that into consideration. Is it something that, you know, we do within ourselves? We can't just go hire companies, we understand. We have to tender
those.
Yeah,
I just had that number just so we had something to use
right.
for
that we have to do tender. So I thank you. It's an excellent presentation. A much needed housing, a good mix of housing that is required. And we do know the challenges facing the foundation in regards to recruitment. And we are all well aware of the very anticipated extensions coming to the manor and our own residential care facility. So housing is a definite need. I am unable to give you a timeline in which you will hear a response, because as you can be aware, this would all be matter for budget considerations. But I believe we will do our best, as I look around this room, as members of council, to get back to you in a suitable time frame.
Thank you. All right, thank you very much.
And any directions, because I know there will be questions from media, I will direct them to you respecting your plans. But any direct questions, I will direct to you, and I will answer it on behalf of council any questions they may have. So our third presenters are Mercy Tobiatic Research Institute, who many of us know are located on the other side of Caledonia. I'll allow our presenters to introduce themselves, and the floor is yours.
Jane Barker, I'm a co-director with the southern Nova Scotia and beyond. And the beyond was a tweak that was added a few years ago, because when we first started, we were a small organization with very few employees. We were working on specific species and issues in western Nova Scotia. But as we have grown, and I'll demonstrate how we've grown, our projects have taken us outside of western Nova Scotia, and indeed outside of, in some cases, Nova Scotia. So we've become a sort of small but mighty institute tucked away in Queens County. And our vision, just a reminder that we envisage prosperous communities, so we're interested in sustainable community development as well, where forests and aquatic ecosystems are healthy, connected, and where species are not at risk, which we know is a bit of a pipe dream right now. We feel our jobs are safe for a few years at least, but it's kind of what we'd all like to not have work, basically, because we'd like not to have any environmental issues. However, I think we have lots of work to do. And our two main, I guess, themes of the work that we do are, we started very much as a research institute, working on our flagstone species is the Blandings turtle, the endangered Blandings turtle, which is only found in this part of Nova Scotia, and is extremely rare. But then our projects grew to aquatic health research, such as looking at water quality monitoring, mercury levels in lakes, and how that was linked to the species that lived there, as well as something that's really kind of grown over the years is forest and landscape connectivity and the health of our forests generally. And as we know, here in Queens County, we're really blessed with some amazing forests. I've talked to lots of forestry professionals and others that come down from different parts of the province, and they all come down and their eyes bulge and say, oh, the forests are so wonderful, look at this pine and so on. So I feel like we often take for granted living in Queens County the kind of natural beauty that we have in this part of the province. And it quickly became apparent that, you know, it's great to do these research projects and it's great to write papers, but unless they're made accessible to the public, they can become dusty and soon forgotten. And so very much a part of the other work that we do is outreach, or has become outreach. We like to kind of join the dots between the research and the evidence that we find in our research to the public, and whether that's to youth or there's a few examples there. We've done lots of school work and the youth outreach. We'd like to keep doing more and more because we see that's a real area that we need to move into. mentioned our Blandings turtles and also our Eastern Ribbon snakes surveys. We've built a herpetology atlas, and we're trying to gain sightings on those to expand our awareness of those species. We've been doing some fairly groundbreaking research on the white nose syndrome and how that's affected our bats, which until very recently weren't endangered, and three species now are. And Laurie Finney has been leading that research. Also our rare lichens. There are many more rare lichens than just the boreal felt lichen is the one that many people know. And this year we've actually had a whole team of people out looking, revisiting the sites from 10 years ago to see if the lichens are still there. We don't have any good back in that yet, but that will give us an indicator of how those species are faring. As well as the monarch butterflies have been such a flagship as well. Everybody loves monarchs and loves planting. We've been helping those species out. Atlantic coastal plain flora are very specific to southwest Nova Scotia, and we're also researching the health. That's very much linked to the health of our lakes and development of lake shores, so I think that's one that we would love to talk to the municipality about more. That's very much impacted by human activities, although all of these things are. Again, provincial old forests, our forest researcher, Colin Gray, has been out all summer testing the protocol for the provincial government. They have a new protocol for scoring whether a forest is old or not. He's been testing that. I think many of us have heard as well of the hemlock hooded algae, which is an invasive species introduced from Japan that was found in Nova Scotia a few years ago, which could threaten almost all our hemlock forests in Nova Scotia, and that again will have an impact in cottage country and for many residents who live on lake shores and along some of our major river systems as well. It's destined to kill pretty much all the hemlock in Nova Scotia, unfortunately, and that's been the case. Maybe not all, maybe I'm too doomed. And as well, looking at forest biodiversity and working with private landowners, the health of forests in private land. I just want to mention two other collaboratives before I hand over to Alicia. One would be, some of you may as well have heard of an initiative, a province-wide initiative called the Family Forest Network that received $9.8 million from the Forestry Innovation Transition Trust to help implement ecological forestry on privately owned woodlands across the province. And MTRI is one of those 11 organizations providing the forest biodiversity advice and services. And the other one that I'll mention and then hand over is the Guestwick Conservation Collaborative. MTRI is one of many organizations that came together 5 years ago to form a collaborative. There are many other people working on conservation and environmental health issues in southwest Nova Scotia. We decided to pull together to help protect species at risk. And this part of Nova Scotia, southwest Nova Scotia particularly, is one of only 11 priority places across Canada for species at risk conservation designated by the federal government. So just to make the point that we live in a real hot spot for species at risk, we kind of have the comparison coal mine, which is a great thing because it means that we live in a healthy environment, but it also means that they are at risk for a reason. So maintaining that healthy environment is really important, and having everybody pull together to align projects and really spend our dollars wisely is the goal of that collaborative. So I'm going to stop there, Alicia, and hand over to you.
My name is Alicia Griffin, so I'm a MISCLAN Outreach Coordinator with the Native Biodiversity Research Institute, MTRI. So I'm going to talk a bit about one of the newer projects at MTRI, the Municipal Engagement Project. So I've been working on this project since I started at MTRI. And the primary goal of the project is to really support municipal environmental stewardship and species at risk stewardship as well. So the first step, of course, we have big goals for this project. We really want to identify some tools and get a species at risk stewardship toolkit for municipalities. But the first step was to really identify what do municipalities need they are working with the Village of Aylesbury to assess the land. They have a big interest in sand barrens, just that's something that they're working on in their organization, so they identified the land as important and obtained a letter of permission from the village to actually complete some research on the land and further kind of look into the ecosystem. So they're doing an aerial photo analysis, interview with local experts and fieldwork to understand the succession changes of the ecosystem composition, and from this they really hope to gain further insight into the sand barrens ecosystem and species at risk that are found on the land, and then provide some options and considerations for the village in the long-term protection of the ecosystem, because this piece of land was actually very recently obtained by the Village of Aylesbury, so they're really hoping to actually provide some good options for that recent ownership. And the third project supported the last few months was the development of an initial draft stewardship plan for the municipally owned region of Big Meadow Bog on Briar Island. So this was also with the municipality of Digby, and the purpose of this, this land was expropriated by the municipality of Digby in 2017 for the purpose of protecting the wetland ecosystem and the endangered eastern mountain haven, so that's a very important plant. And outcomes of the project include a draft stewardship plan and an outline of next steps. And the goal is really to find a plan that works best for everyone involved in the area, including the Briar Island community, the conservation community, and the municipality of Digby. And this project actually has some ongoing phases taking place now, so we're continuing to support that. So these projects kind of show the variety of different projects that we're able to support with municipalities, and also the different levels of interactions that municipalities can have with these projects. We really enjoy supporting those and look forward to trying to find more projects to support in the coming year of this project, and yeah, just finding those connections and ways to work with municipalities and also identify other not-for-profit organizations to work with municipalities as well. And the last and most exciting slide. So this week we are hosting a conference, we're calling it a showcase, the Guestwork Conservation Showcase. And one big part of this is the Community Science Showcase. So this is an evening portion of the day event on November 9th at White Point Beach Resort. So the main day is actually completely full. We had a lot of interest. We were expecting for the main day conference about 140 people. So we're really excited that we have a lot of interest in the main conference day. And then this is the evening session. It's free, open to the public. We have some snacks provided, and as well as refreshments. And we're really trying to use that 6:30 to 9 p.m. Time slot that we have to the best of our advantage by providing a lot of engaging content and opportunity to learn about the great work that's going on in the Guestwork region. So we have a one-hour poster session from 6:30 to 7:30 p.m. And that's when there'll be the snacks and refreshments served. And there's 27 posters that will be up displaying the amazing work that is being done in the Guestwick region. So this includes work from other not-for-profits in the region. And Shirai has quite a few posters as well. We also have some academic, some students that have posters in, as well as some government organizations that have posters up as well. So it should be great to learn about that. And then that will be followed by 1 hour of presentations. So that will be 7:30 to 8:30, and this is going to be focused on community-based science topics. So the lineup includes a range of topics. We have monarch butterflies, so milkweed project that we have at MTRI. There's going to be a presentation on invasive species, forest birds, and they're all themed around kind of community-based science and volunteer opportunities and how to get involved and that sort of thing. So that's really our theme with those presentations. Like I said, those are 7:30 to 8:30 at White Point Beach Resort, but we're also going to be able to live stream that through our Facebook and Zoom for anyone who can't make it in person, because we do understand that we're all kind of used to that option now, so we definitely want to be able to provide that. But we're really excited to be able to have
Ms. Griffin and Ms. Barker, you have come a long way in 17 years since your very beginnings. I think that 15 full-time employees and the summer boost and all the great things that you do. So I will open the floor up for any comments from members of council. Councilor Romero.
So how would one go about getting the links for the Zoom?
If you, you could email it to myself,
yep.
And I can share that out.
I can do that
you
right
do
now.
Have my email.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Or Christine, you would have Christine's as well. Perhaps
oh, yeah.
It would be more appropriate to email that to Christine.
Okay, sounds good.
If you Google Reggie Tobiatic,
right.
We're on Facebook. You can like our page.
Deputy Mayor Fancy.
What can we talk about? Conferences for the votes for the dates of meetings. Mm-hmm. Is that something that part of your, you said there was able desk for invasive weeds? And I don't know what they are. So, I mean, if it's something we see that should be afraid of or how to handle it.
This is more than eight, actually, but,
oh,
yes, but we've actually just collaborated with the invasive council of Nova Scotia on a guide. Which is, I think we have some copy of that, if it's not already posted on our website, we can get that there. But I would say there are several that are particularly bad in this part of the Scotia. The most pernicious one that I'm aware of is the glossy buckthorn, which is a real threat to not just our forest ecosystems, but to our wetland ecosystems as well. It's really, really difficult to eradicate. If you want to see some, come and see me, Jack, and I'll take you out, because it's almost everywhere, certainly in North Wales. But yeah, really serious threat. We did a survey with some of our stakeholders and asked them to rank what some of the most serious threats were to our ecosystems. And I think invasive species was the second highest on the list. So very, very, something that I think the comments really was to see that and pay attention to.
Other questions, comments? Councillor Muse.
You said with the bats, they're still studying, are they come on the comeback at all, or are they still have that disease?
So I would say, without kind of having seen an analysis of the results, that things look really hopeful in Nova Scotia. I think anecdotally, pushing more, the research that we've been doing on some of the roost sites shows an increase in numbers. That having been said, I know that in Newfoundland the numbers are still going down, so it's maybe too early to get too hopeful and too optimistic. But one researcher was also not choose to appear at the university, was looking at fat guano to see if there were cases of whiteness syndrome in the guano, the group. If bats are surviving within their system, there's hope potentially that they will be building up some resistance. But right now, I would say it's too early to say. But initial research would show that there is an increase.
Yeah. Comments? Councillor Brown.
In my area, I'm seeing a lot of the hemlock woolly adelgate. It's there's a lot of hemlock trees in through La Belle area, and almost every tree on my lot is infected. So when I looked at the cost of inoculating trees, it's prohibitively expensive, and some of the other methods that people are looking at of spraying trees with horticultural oil, it scares me that these are approaches, because they get into the water supply and they're also neonicotinoids that I probably pronounced that wrong, but which are bad for the bees and other species. So it's, you know, we're in a bad place. But also this year was one of the first times we've seen in the Pond Hook area blue-green algae blooms, and we're also kind of concerned with that, because as people take their canoes, kayaks, personal watercraft from one lake to another, it's going to spread to all the lakes. And as an older developed area, about 75% of the cottages out there right now get their water from the lakes. And, you know, it's going to be a huge expense for people to drill wells, you know, to to get away from this invasive species. Our fire departments are going to have to be dealing with dead, huge canopy trees. So these, you know, we have to do something, and the research you guys are doing hopefully will help us get to a point where we don't have to deal with these. Yeah.
Are there any other comments? Seeing none, as you are aware, we do own land that perhaps not this year, but some year down the road, because this region has a fair amount of projects on the way. But as you spoke, Ms. Griffin, about the partnering that you can do, I thought about our Cubsco land, where we know that we have shoreline erosion, and there are ways to combat that. I thought of our Path Lake lands. The Region of Queens owns a considerable amount of land in the Port LaBear area around Path Lake. As far as I know, there's never been any research at all on that land. We were gifted that basically to keep for hunting, fishing, those types of purposes. I think of our watershed lands that we know are so important to protect. And of course, we have Beach Meadows Beach, which is a great example of coastal. So perhaps in the future years, because I know Ms. Griffin, you're going to be around for a while, and Ms. Barker is going to continue with her outreach and awareness and the linkage to the Southwest Nova Biosphere Reserve. I just think we're very fortunate to have had that early partnership form back in 2000 and the early 2000s between the biosphere and Ketchum to result in MTRI. And I wish you well at your conference, and thank you much for your presentation. And for any members of council, I know the door's not locked when they go by. When you happen to go by, they may be busy, but if you're ever going across Route 8 heading to Annapolis or just to Caledonia, and one, it's like 15 minutes maybe, I just encourage you all to visit MTRI, to check on Facebook or their webpage. They do amazing things. They have great literature available about species at risk, and it's just a great awareness, because so much of our discussion is often Liverpool, Milton, Brooklyn, that core area. I think it's your presentation is very timely about the great offerings that we have in the rest of Queens County. So thank you.
Thank you.
We're just going to take 5 minutes to have a stand up. A little quick break, maybe 7 minutes max, but if everyone's just invited to